Britain and Peace and War, 1900 to 1918, GCSE History Revision Podcast, OCR Exam Board. Hello and welcome. I'm so glad you're here because today we are diving into one of the most dramatic and transformative periods in British history, Britain and Peace and War, 1900 to 1918. This is a topic that has everything: social revolution, political protest, world war, and the beginning of modern Britain as we know it. Whether you're revising for your OCR GCSE history exam or just want to really understand this period, you are in exactly the right place. Over the next 10 minutes, we're going to cover the key events, the key people, the exam tips, and I'll even throw in a quick-fire quiz at the end to test your recall. So grab a pen, get comfortable, and let's get started. Let's begin with the liberal reforms. By 1900, Britain was the wealthiest nation on earth, but that wealth was incredibly unequal. Surveys by Charles Booth in London and Seebohm Rowntree in York had revealed shocking levels of poverty. Rowntree found that around 28% of York's population lived in poverty. That's nearly one in three people. This was a wake-up call. When the Liberal Party won a landslide election in 1906, they began a series of welfare reforms that would lay the foundations of the modern welfare state. Let me walk you through the key ones. In 1906, the Education Provision of Meals Act allowed local councils to provide free school meals for the poorest children. This matters because it was the first time the government accepted responsibility for children's welfare, not just their parents. In 1907, school medical inspections were introduced. Now, children could actually be diagnosed with health problems, though treatment wasn't free until 1912. In 1908, two huge pieces of legislation arrived. First, the Old Age Pensions Act. This gave people over 70 who earned less than £21 a year a pension of 5 shillings a week. It wasn't much, but for the first time, the elderly didn't have to choose between the workhouse and starvation. Second, the Children's Charter, a package of laws protecting children from abuse and neglect, setting up juvenile courts, and banning children from pubs and from buying cigarettes. Then, in 1909, the Labor Exchanges Act set up a national network of offices where unemployed workers could register and find jobs. And finally, the big one, the 1911 National Insurance Act. Part 1 covered sickness. Workers paid 4 pence a week, employers paid 3 pence, and the government paid 2 pence, giving workers access to a doctor and sick pay. Part 2 covered unemployment in certain industries like shipbuilding and engineering. For your exam, the key thing is not just to list these reforms. You must explain their impact. The Old Age Pensions Act reduced elderly poverty. The National Insurance Act meant workers had a safety net for the first time. These reforms showed a new philosophy. The government had a duty to protect its citizens from poverty caused by circumstances beyond their control. Now let's talk about the campaign for women's votes, one of the most important political stories of this era. There were two main organizations, and examiners love to test whether you can distinguish between them. The UNUS, the National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies, was founded in 1897 by Millicent Fawcett. Their motto was argument, not action. They used peaceful methods, petitions, lobbying MPs, public meetings, and marches. By 1914, they had around 100,000 members. The WSPU, the Women's Social and Political Union, was founded in 1903 by Emmeline Pankhurst and her daughters, Christabel and Sylvia. Their motto was deeds, not words. They escalated to militant tactics, chaining themselves to railings, smashing shop windows in London's West End in 1912, arson attacks on post boxes and buildings, and hunger strikes when imprisoned. The most dramatic moment came in June 1913 when Emily Wilding Davison ran onto the track at the Epsom Derby and was struck by the King's horse. She died 4 days later. Whether it was a deliberate act of martyrdom or a protest gone wrong is still debated, and that debate is exactly the kind of thing examiners want you to explore. When war broke out in 1914, both organizations suspended their campaigns. Women threw themselves into the war effort, working in munitions, transport, nursing, and farming. This changed public attitudes significantly. In 1918, the Representation of the People Act gave the vote to women over 30 who met property qualifications, around 8.4 million women. Full equal voting rights didn't come until 1928. A common mistake candidates make is saying women got the vote because of war work. The reality is more complex. Pre-war political pressure, changing social attitudes, and war work all combined to bring about change. When war was declared in August 1914, the government immediately passed the Defense of the Realm Act, known as DORA. This gave the government sweeping powers to control civilian life. Under DORA, the government could censor newspapers and private letters, take over railways and factories for war production, restrict pub opening hours, and reduce the strength of beer, because Lloyd George famously said Britain was fighting Germany, Austria, and drink. Dora also allowed the government to use propaganda posters to encourage recruitment. Voluntary recruitment was initially very successful. Over 750,000 men signed up in the first 2 months. But by 1916, casualties were so high that voluntary recruitment wasn't enough. The Military Service Act of January 1916 introduced conscription, compulsory military service, for single men aged 18 to 41, later extended to married men. On the home front, rationing became a reality. Voluntary rationing was introduced in 1916 after German U-boats began sinking supply ships. By 1918, compulsory rationing of meat, butter, and sugar was in force. Food queues became a daily sight in British towns and cities. Zeppelin raids brought the war literally to people's doorsteps, killing civilians and causing widespread fear. The psychological impact of casualty lists published in newspapers was enormous. Families lived in constant dread of the dreaded telegram. For source questions on the home front, remember, government propaganda sources are useful for understanding what the government wanted people to think. Their purpose is to recruit, maintain morale, or encourage rationing. The bias is the point, not a reason to dismiss the source. Right, let's talk exam technique. This is where marks are won and lost. For OCR GCSE history, you need to know your assessment objectives. AO1 is knowledge and understanding, 35% of your marks. AO2 is explanation and analysis, another 35%. AO3 is source evaluation, 15%. And AO4 is historical interpretations, 15%. For explain why questions worth 12 marks, use the Peel structure: point, evidence, explanation, link. Don't just list causes. Explain how each cause contributed to the outcome. Use connective language. This led to, as a result, this meant that. Link your causes together to show how they combined. For how useful source questions worth 8 marks, you must address 4 things: the content of the source, what does it actually say or show, the provenance, who created it, when, and why, the usefulness, what can historians learn from it, and the limitations, what does it not tell us, or how might it be misleading. Here's the big mistake candidates make with sources: writing, "This source is biased, therefore it is useless." That will lose you marks. Instead, write, "Although this source is biased because it was produced by the government as propaganda, this bias is itself useful because it reveals the government's aim to maintain civilian morale and encourage voluntary rationing." See the difference? The bias tells us something valuable about the context. 3 other common mistakes to avoid. 1. Confusing the 1906 Education Act with the 1908 Children's Charter. The 1906 Act was about school meals. The 1908 Children's Charter was about protecting children from abuse and neglect. 2. Saying women got the vote purely because of war work. Always acknowledge the pre-war suffrage campaigns and the limitations of the 1918 Act. Only women over 30 with property qualifications could vote. 3. Writing narrative instead of analysis. Telling the story of what happened is not the same as explaining why it happened or assessing its significance. Every paragraph needs an analytical point. Okay, quiz time. I'll ask the question, give you a few seconds to think, then give the answer. Ready? Question 1. What year was the Old Age Pensions Act passed, and how much did it pay? 1908. 5 shillings a week for over 70s earning under £21 a year. Question 2. What did the initials NUSS stand for, and who founded it? National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies, founded by Millicent Fawcett in 1897. Question 3. What does DORA stand for, and when was it passed? Defense of the Realm Act, passed in August 1914. Question 4. In what year was conscription introduced, and what was the act called? 1916, the Military Service Act. Question 5. What were the limitations of the 1918 Representation of the People Act for women? Only women over 30 who met property qualifications could vote, around 8.4 million women. How did you do? If you got all 5, brilliant. If not, go back and review those sections. Those are exactly the kinds of specific details that separate level 3 from level 4 answers. Let's bring it all together. Britain between 1900 and 1918 was transformed. The liberal reforms showed that government had a new responsibility to protect citizens from poverty. This was a revolution in political thinking. The suffrage movement showed that ordinary people, especially women, were willing to fight and in some cases die for political equality. And the First World War reshaped British society from top to bottom, Women entered the workforce in unprecedented numbers. The government took control of daily life through DORA, and the home front became a battlefield in its own right. For your exam, remember, specific knowledge earns marks. Dates, names, statistics, and legislation, use them. Analysis earns marks. Explain causes, consequences, and significance. And for sources, always engage with provenance and purpose. You've got this. Keep revising, keep practicing past papers, and remember, every mark you earn in the exam is a reflection of the work you put in now. Good luck, and I'll see you in the next episode.